Football season will be here quicker than you think. When planning your football trips, we know that one of the biggest pains is arranging your pre-game tailgate party. This season, let GridironTailgates.com take care of all of your tailgating needs. They provide everything for your large private party, including a private party tent, tables, satellite TV, catering, a personal bartender, and setup and takedown. Visit GridironTailgates.com and enter promo code PAC12, PAC12, to receive 10% off your group's next tailgate, or call 303-359-5328. GridironTailgates.com are here to make your tailgate experience easy, affordable, and enjoyable. Again, that phone number is 303-359-5328. GridironTailgates.com. Enter code PAC12.
Now available in more homes than the PAC12 network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC.
We are the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we are the Podcast of Champions, talking Pac-12 football each and every week. It's only been a few days since our last show, and we're going to talk about the Arizona schools, continuing the tour of the Pac-12 South previews. If you have any questions or comments, our email address is pac12podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at Pac-12 Podcast, and our website, as always, pac12podcast.com. All of our old episodes are up there. And then if you'd like to text or leave a voicemail for us, 424-532-0678 is the number. We like your texts. We like your voicemails. We like your emails. We like your tweets. We like it all, David.
We will like everything you do. We're that desperate. That's how we operate.
Way to sell it, Dave. All right. I love it. All right. Before we jump into our previews, did you know 66% of men start losing their hair by the age of 35? When you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. 4hims.com is a one-stop shop for your hair loss. You get medical-grade solutions, real doctors offering well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. They're not herbal supplements. They're prescription solutions backed by science, and they're shipped directly to your door. Order now. All of our Podcast of Champion listeners will get a trial month of everything you need to keep your hair for just $5 today. Right now, while supplies last, you can see the website for full details. It would cost hundreds if you went to a doctor or pharmacy. It will only cost $5 for you now here. So go to 4hims.com/champs. That's FORHIMS.com. /champs, 4hims.com/champs. Well, I think people liked our mountain previews last week, right? And we're doing desert previews this week.
Yep, we go from the highs to the lows, or low temperatures to the highs. One way or another, we're going from one extreme to another. And we're joined right now by Chris Cartman, at Chris Cartman on Twitter, publisher of SunDevilSource.com, your expert on all things Arizona State. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. I actually don't go back to Phoenix until tomorrow. I'm enjoying sort of an off day, half off day here in LA. It's warm, but it's not 115 degrees.
Matt, oh, we should have had you come into the studio, Chris. I didn't realize you're here.
Yeah, I'm actually working on a little some other kind of project. Don't want to say too much about it. I'm not going to take either one of your jobs. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Good. Because we
I appreciate that.
We're vulnerable. So, you know, you could if you wanted to.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind the weather out here. You know what I mean? Like that. Traffic. I don't know about the traffic, though.
Yeah. Traffic's kind of crappy, but it's hot here, but not like Arizona hot here.
The weird thing about Arizona is that, like, kind of monsoon heat that comes in periodically. too, where it's not just that dry, insane heat, but you also get like that occasional monsoon thing.
Well, let me tell you how bad that it is. We are anxious for a 100% humidity and rain when it's still going to be, you know, 100 degrees and just pouring instead of 115 degrees and like a blow dryer in your face.
Oh my God.
Nice.
That's amazing. That's beautiful.
We got to do our
Arizona State Sun Devils
preview. And that's why we have Chris on. And Chris, we got a series of topics we want to talk to you about, but I know there was some new stadium news that came out. Maybe you want to share what that is before we jump into everything else.
Well, basically, you know, they're laying the sod now. Everybody's known that this was going to be, originally it was a 3-year project. It got turned into a 4-year project because they changed some of the designs. And then there's been talk about, having this new football league be home, be housed, one of the teams, at ASU. And then there's, a whole nother arena that they're building. And so there's just basically, you know, all these, you know, different components that are going on as part of the deal.
Well, we're looking forward to that. Grass on the field, you need that. You know, we need that to play. So
sod important.
Sod going down, that's got to be an important step, an important milestone in the remodeling of any stadium.
Yeah, we're not landscapers or anything, but I have to figure that's important.
By the time August gets there, you might want to have some grass to actually go and play on.
Yeah, and August, just 2 days away. So, hey, there you go. Well, we've got a lot of topics to go over. The first one, I mean, this is really a formality because obviously there's been a lot of stability at ASU. But we have to ask because we're asking everyone, have there been any coaching changes, anything – you know, different from last season going on with the Sun Devils?
Let me think about that for a second. it was interesting being at Pac-12 Media Day because the scrum was like packed. And then like some of the other coaches, there was like 3 reporters, you know, it was like almost like a one-on-one. And then Herm, it was like 20 people, and then one reporter came up and was like, what's going on here? What's the big deal? And then he saw there was like all these reporters, and he was like, oh, it's Herm Edwards. And then as he walked away, he was like, you play to win the game. And it was just kind of like a spectacle, actually. Mark Brand, who's been media relations director for 36 years at ASU, said that it was like he was the body man of a celebrity, you know, like he said it was a different experience than anything that he had seen. And there's just there's a level of intrigue around who the head coach is that I haven't seen before.
The coaching changes, obviously at the top with Herm Edwards. What about, what kind of stability was there with the rest of the staff? Is it all new staff? Have they kind of gelled? Like, what's that all been like?
Right. So Billy Napier was going to be the coordinator for a second year, but then he got the head coaching job at Louisiana Lafayette. So Edwards decided to promote Rob Likens from the wide receiver position, where he had just coached 1 year at ASU, to be the coordinator. Likens had previously been the coordinator at Kansas, so he has some experience in that regard, and he knows ASU's personnel really well. And then the other position coach that is returning is John Simon as the running backs. And then the tight ends coach is Donnie Yannis, who had been the on-campus recruiting director. So he's been around the program for a couple of years now, and now he gets bumped up to an on-field role. They have a new offensive line coach, Dave Christensen. He was at one point the head coach at Wyoming, had been offensive line coach at Utah and various other places. He's a very veteran type of a guy. And then Charlie Fisher, who had been a football coach, not a head coach, but not at the FBS level. He was an FCS head coach. He's friends with Rob Likens. They go back to when they worked together on a UMass staff, I believe, like a couple decades ago. He's now the receivers coach. Now, on the defensive side, that's totally different. You have Danny Gonzalez. He's the coordinator who was like the top assistant at San Diego State, and they're putting in a whole new scheme that's very similar to what the Aztecs run, basically the same defense. And then you have Antonio Pierce, who went from Long Beach Poly head coach, former NFL starting linebacker. He's the linebackers coach. You have another San Diego State former assistant, Tony White, is coaching defensive backs. And then they hired Sean Nua, who was the defensive line coach at Navy, is now the defensive line coach. So, you know, I guess eight of their coaches are new. A couple of them are returning, and one was promoted.
So obviously complete or near complete changeover from the coaching ranks. When you're looking at the different depth charts, I mean, I think everybody knows ASU is returning maybe the best wide receiver in the Pac-12 in N'Keal Harry, but also returning Manny Wilkins, senior starter at quarterback. What other big names are among the returning starters for ASU this year?
Well, actually, one of the most underrated players in the league probably going into this year is Kyle Williams, who's ASU's number two receiver. Pro Football Focus, you know, we get access to all that stuff, obviously, on 24/7 Sports. And he's the sixth highest graded receiver coming back in the league. So ASU is the only school that has two guys that are that highly regarded. N'Keal Harry's the number one rated returning receiver by Pro Football Focus at the Power 5 level. Kyle Williams is a guy who's capable of having 70, 80 catches, over 1,000 yards. And he can play inside or outside. He's also got the ability to be, if they wanted to use him as a punt returner, they could do that as well. So that's a very good 1-2 punch, especially when you have a senior quarterback in Wilkins. And then ASU has four offensive linemen returning who have started quite a bit. Plus they got Casey Tucker from Stanford as a postgraduate transfer, and he'll probably start at left tackle. That's pretty much, they've already put that in pen. So they have basically five offensive linemen with starting experience. They have two of the top receivers in the league, and they have a senior quarterback who's a multi-year starter. Their tight ends are all back. That's not a very talented group, I wouldn't say, but their experience as well. So offensively, it has to be one of the most seasoned and functional groups that's in the South. And then do you guys want me to talk about defense?
Sure.
Also?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, so basically their defense, of course, lost two really good linebackers, Christian Sam and DJ Calhoun. But JJ Wilson was kind of a revelation when he switched from offense to defense in the middle of the season. They think that he could be a potential all-league, you know, somewhere on the all-league spectrum as a linebacker. And then Caron Crump was lost for the season with an ACL. He was like on a really great sack pace when he got hurt against Texas Tech in the third game of the season. I think he had like five or six sacks already. So he's one of the better pass rushers in the league when healthy. And then Rennell Wren is a senior nose tackle who has to be one of the best pro prospects on the ASU roster. It's been kind of a slow development for him, but he's just like strong as an ox, and he's like on the all Greyhound team, like first off the bus guys. And then the corners, you have Chase Lucas, who he's only a sophomore, but he'll probably be one of the best corners in the league by next season, and like a first or second round draft pick. That's his upside. And Kobe Williams started last year at the other corner position. He's a really solid player too. Their big question marks are really at safety, at middle linebacker, and then they even though they like their defensive ends in this new scheme that they're running, which is really like a 3-3-5, there's some question marks there as well.
Hey, Ryan, let me have a quick follow-up.
Sure, yeah.
Given all of that, especially the returning strength on offense, especially, do you think it's a little nuts that ASU was picked last in the South? Do you think that's people sleeping on them maybe because of the, I don't know, feeling that Herm isn't, you know, necessarily up to the task head coach. What do you think's causing that?
Well, it's definitely a Herm bias. That's a major thing because it's not just what you said there, David, but also coming back from a team that won 6 games in the league last year.
Right.
If they had only, you know, won 2 or 3 games in the league, then you would say, okay, well, they're 6th. But when you, like, you know, I actually struggled with my ballot between 3rd and 4th for ASU in the South. I didn't think that 5th or 6th was reasonable. UCLA and Colorado, I feel very strongly that they should not be ranked ahead of ASU, just given the pieces that are returning and the fact that ASU won 6 games last year in the Pac-12. Now, granted, you know, the other factor is the schedule. ASU's 5 road games this year in the Pac-12. It's a tougher sort of schedule than they had last season, and so, you know, you could subtract a game, maybe 2 games, for that. But really, like, when you look at it, if ASU wins fewer than 4 league games, which is what it would take to finish 6th in the South, That would be actually underperforming their talent, pretty obviously, in my opinion.
Chris, yeah, you 100% agree. I picked Arizona State to finish last, and I feel horrible about it. I should not have done that. It's stupid. Like, it should have done it. Like, there's.
So why did you? Like what?
It's a Herb bias. You know, I think the schedule was tougher, like you said, in the more road games. I think Utah's going to be better, but Arizona State spanked Utah last year, like on the road, right? Like. But I do think I picked
and be Washington.
Yeah, which is insane. We'll see. I mean, I think I'm going to be completely wrong on that one. I still don't feel good long term about the Herm experience. But with so many people coming back, I think this is going to be a squad that's better than at least what I predicted. So, you mentioned the 3-3-5 on the defensive side. What kind of defense scheme changes have been made? You can talk about the 3-3-5 and then anything on offense too.
Right. So the best way to look at this is that it's an aggressive defense that has an odd front, and it's designed to keep quarterbacks unsure of what they're looking at pre-snap and what that's going to actually turn into. So they're going to bring a lot of 4 and 5 man pressures. But you're not going to know who that 5th person is when they pass rush, and they're going to morph into different coverages of man and zone. And what happened at San Diego State under Rocky Long in the last 5 years is they've consistently been one of the top takeaway teams in the country, especially with interceptions, because they play robber coverages and they just fool the quarterback's eyes, and they impact the quarterback with their pass rush. So and that's kind of in a creative way. So it's kind of different than what we've seen from other defenses in the league in terms of where the players actually align. So they have this hybrid position that is like the 5th guy in the secondary, but it's in the middle of the defense, and it's at like an 8 to 10 yard alignment. So it looks almost like a linebacker that's playing a little bit deeper than your typical inside backer alignments. And that player is a very central figure in their defense. It's called the Tillman position. But one of their potential flaws is they don't have somebody who's established that's going to play that role. It's probably going to either be a senior who's been around a lot but hasn't played much, named Tyler Wiley, or it's going to be a sophomore who played last year as a true freshman and looks like he's going to be really good but isn't quite ready yet, and that's Evan Fields. So the key for ASU, like everybody, is you got to stop the run, and then you can't give up the big plays. Now, there's potential for them to not be able to do one or either, and so it's a matter of, you know, being fundamentally sound before you start to layer in all these different types of things that you can do defensively. And then on the other side of the ball, what Herm Edwards says is, look, Manny Wilkins has had, this is his 4th coordinator in 4 years. He's already been through all this stuff. We need to try to figure out a way to make it most user-friendly for him to play to his strengths. And yet at the same time, Rob Likens is trying to put his own sort of wrinkle on it. So they're going to be a little bit under center more. They're going to be doing some naked bootlegs, but still have a big RPO component to it out of a lot of shotgun. So it's a multiple style offense, and trying to figure out a way to get the ball quickly to your playmakers while also giving you some play action opportunities and big play shots to N'Keal Harry.
So when I was going through ASU, I'm with you actually a lot on the depth. Been talking about that quite a bit. But the one limiting factor for me was, and you alluded to this, was the schedule. Not only the road games, but also the split with the Pac-12, where this year, and you can get into this because we want to go over the schedule now. It's a tough non-conference slate, and then it's probably the wrong end of the North schools to face this year. But what do you think are the big key schedule points from those perspectives?
Well, look, there's so much that's happening from a transitional standpoint that you want to have confidence early on. And ASU last year went to UTSA, and it was still a game like well into the third quarter. So now they open with UTSA at home. There's the advantage of being at home. But it's not like a gimme game. Like, there may be a 10, 11-point favorite. So you got to win that game. And then they're going to be an underdog probably at home to Michigan State by 3 to 7 points. Between Michigan State and San Diego State the following week, they have to win one of those two games. I feel like if they somehow end up 1-2 and then they got to play Washington on the road right away after that, it could derail them very early on. Whereas 2-2 and 0-1 in the league, when the following game is Oregon State, which is like a gimme win at home, that's okay. So I think the whole key for them is they got to be 3-2 at a minimum in their first five games, feeling okay about how things are going before they really get into the meat of their schedule in October, which is at Colorado, at home versus Stanford, at USC, and then they play Utah and UCLA, I think, after that. So that's a gauntlet. To me, it really comes down to figuring out a way to be 3-2 through the first five games.
You talk about that gauntlet. I don't know if you could have a trap game in there because it's just some tough stretches, but would you say there's one that maybe if they do get on a roll that this is one you have to kind of watch out for? It could be a trap game?
Probably not really. Who's ASU really going to overlook? Last year they got absolutely crushed at Colorado, or against Colorado. And so, are they going to, overlook going to Colorado when they had such a bad experience the last time they played there? I should say 2 years ago when they played there. I doubt it, especially not with their senior leadership. You're not going to overlook Stanford or USC, and then Utah is forecast to be one of the better teams in the South. So I just don't, I'm not really one of the quote unquote trap game guys anyways, as far as like how I see things. But to me, that only really matters if you're like a really good team, and then you play Oregon State on the road or Washington State on the road or something, or Cal or something like that. Maybe even at home, you get one of those teams and they could sneak up on you. So I don't see anything that would, to me, look like a trap game for ASU on the schedule. More so what I see, Ryan, I see the possibility of losing 5 or 6 games in a row, and they have to figure out a way to win 1 or 2 of them to basically keep them in position to where they can then finish strong in the last 3 to 4 games in their schedule and make sure that they go to a bowl game.
So when you're looking at potential newcomers who make an impact among the freshmen, who do you see, potentially impacting the two deep in a real way this year?
Well, there's no doubt that they'll play at least a handful of newcomers, including freshmen. You have to assume that where their biggest weaknesses are is also where they're more likely to play guys. And it just so happens that that's where they have some of their best recruits. So Shari Crosswell is a safety who will have he'll almost for sure be in the two deep and has a good chance to be a starter. And these coaches believe, as I do, and they've said as much, the further you are away from the line of scrimmage, the better your chance of playing as a freshman, because the physical challenges and are less. So Crosswell is a good, really good candidate. The other guy on defense that, you know, makes, you know, absolute sense is Merlin Robertson, especially because they don't have a really, really established third linebacker. And he's a bigger bodied kid who arrives at 6'3", 240 plus pounds, and has really high expectations. So those two guys among freshmen on defense, they also added two junior college defensive backs who already were with them in the spring. Taron Adams will probably be their third corner, and like if they go into a dime package, he'll probably be on the field. Dominique Harrison's a safety who was with the second team. And then maybe an outside chance of Jermaine Lole as a defensive end creeping into the two deep. And then on offense, they don't need as much on offense because they're, as we said earlier, they're a lot more established with who their better players are. They do have a junior college transfer as a wide receiver who has a very good chance to get their third starting spot, or if not that, be like their fourth or fifth receiver, and that's Brandon Ayuk from Sierra College in Northern California. Alabama tried to steal him late and wasn't successful. But other than that, the only other possibilities would be at running back, where ASU only really returns two guys, and probably one of either Brock Sturges or A.J. Carter will end up in the second or third team's slot at running back.
You mentioned the running back position, Chris. Certainly big loss of production there. So the position battle to become the starting running back, I assume that's going to be a good one. But, you know, that or some other positions, what do you think are the best battles that ASU fans should watch for this fall?
Well, sort of an unconventional perspective, probably. But I think that ASU will be better at running back this year. Really. So Kalen Balazs was it was so fascinating, the dichotomy of Kalen Balazs. Like, he's perceived as this like really good NFL prospect, and yet ASU fans, like in a very clear majority, did not like him at all. Like, they felt like he, you know, which I believe as well, had very poor field vision, got tackled quite easily. He rejected open holes to run into traffic. And so the yards per carry of Eno Benjamin, who was a very highly touted freshman last year who played despite coming off an injury, was actually easily better than both Kalen Balazs and DeMario Richard. And DeMario Richard was a very good player for ASU, but he didn't have a high ceiling. He was a very good, grinded out guy who didn't have breakaway speed and wasn't going to beat you with any kind of big plays. Whereas Eno Benjamin, when he came into the game, you were on the edge of your seat because he had the chance to break one. And they're going to be trending more in that direction. And so even though maybe there'll be some questions about, like, okay, how well are they going to protect? And is there going to be, like, they didn't have any fumble problems last year. Maybe they put one or two on the ground that they shouldn't now. But they're going to be more dynamic, I think, is the best way to look at it. So the depth chart battles, you know, I really want to see what's going to happen with the third wide receiver spot that I alluded to earlier. Frank Darby is a guy that by far had the best average catch yardage. It was like 22 yards a catch or more, and nobody else was over 17, but he just wasn't very versatile. They have this other kid, Terrell Chapman, who's like a fourth-year junior who has a lot of potential, but it's been undeveloped to this point in his career. It's time for him to really show and prove. So I think that, you know, with Brandon Ayuk coming in, kind of what all is going to happen there. And then I think on defense, they're deep and they're going to play a lot of guys up front, so the depth chart battles don't matter as much. But what's going to happen at linebacker between the arrival of Merlin Robertson, the more veteran guys that they have returning who haven't taken that next step yet, which would include Nick Ralston, it would include Kalen Thomas and Malik Lawal. Like those, like somebody has to step up out of those guys. And then there's Jalen Harvey, he was ASU's third receiver last year, and he's moved to secondary, to safety. But it didn't look like it was a supernatural thing in the spring. Is he going to stay there? Is he going to flourish? Is it not going to work and he's going to end up back at receiver? That's sort of to be determined. And then how does that whole safety dynamic work itself out between what they call their two ranger positions, like left and right, boundary, field safety, and then that hybrid Tillman position with the guys that I mentioned earlier. Those are kind of the big position battles.
When you're looking at strengths of this team, I mean, obviously from what you've said so far, generally offense seems like it's going to be a strength. But when you're pegging like what you think this team is going to hang its hat on, maybe both offensively and defensively, what do you think those things are?
Well, to me, it's going to come down to, are they going to be able to run the football with a decent amount of success, given their more veteran presence on the line? That was an area where they weren't as good last year as they should have been. And if you don't have that, it doesn't really open up the full range of what you can do offensively with your wide receivers and with Manny Wilkins and the play action component. And you instead have to be this, you know, run replacement, dink and duck type of a team. So I think that to me is like what I'm really going to watch closely. Are they going to be able to run the ball decently well, even against good teams? And then I think defensively you have to see, because what this defense, it's, you know, a lot of times the aggressive schemes, they'll slant the front in order to channel and to gap up everything. Well, this defense, guys kind of are moving everywhere, and that it makes it unpredictable, but it also creates more potential to have holes through your interior if you aren't schematically sound to your scheme. So what I need to see is, are they going to be able to be sound what they're doing in a way that keeps teams from gashing them in the run game? Because if they can't do that, then the rest of it doesn't even matter. But if they are able to do that, then are they also able to prevent the big plays through the middle third of their defense? I think that's the whole key, is like what's going to happen on inside run and what's going to happen in the passing game through the middle third of their defense.
Conversely, Chris, on the other side of the ball, you know, if they do go through a 5 or 6 straight game losing streak, what do you think those weaknesses are going to be that would kind of maybe cause something like that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I just think that they're not very deep. If they have any injury problems, that could be catastrophic. If they're young players or players who are older but haven't played very much, if they don't get enough out of them or as much as they hope to, that's going to be really problematic, because then they're going to be forcing these young guys, freshmen maybe in some cases, to have to be, you know, learning on the go in a new scheme with no experience against the best teams that they'll face in the middle of their schedule. That's how they could end up having it spiral out of control on them, especially if they can't stop the run or run the football. I mean, really, at the end of the day, I think if ASU is able to do both of those things, stop the run and run the ball, they will substantially outperform expectations. If they're able to do one of those two things, they'll be like a 6-win, you know, give or take one game, you know, team. And if they can do neither of those two, that's how they end up being like a 3-win, 4-win, 6th place in the Pac-12 South type of a team.
Right. Well, any other interesting news or notes or anything else you want to share about ASU before we let you go?
You know, not really. The you know, as we're seeing across the country, the early official visit period that was new led to more commitments than normal. ASU had 11 commitments by like July 4th, which is, I think, the second most all time. And what the staff has done is they've decided to try to find value in guys that maybe were overlooked for one reason or another. Like, for example, they took commitments from two offensive linemen who both skipped a grade earlier, and they're very young for the class. and they're both newer to football. So what they've tried to do is they knew they weren't going to compete in their first full class coming from behind against the top schools in the Pac-12. So their strategy was, we're going to take kids with these with great intangibles, like kids that have great grades. They you know, no off the field issues whatsoever, no academic issues whatsoever, like ultimate buy-in kids who also for one reason or another may be overlooked in the recruiting marketplace. So that's the other thing I'm looking forward to seeing if that strategy pays off. But then they really are trying to ramp up their competitiveness against the, you know, the top half of the Pac-12 in that 2020 recruiting class. So we have to see what happens there.
Chris, we had some fans write in some different questions. We don't want to go through a bunch of them, but Anthony wanted to know, which game are you most looking forward to this year for Arizona State?
You know, me personally, it probably is about like which road games are kind of cool places to go to and spend a weekend. So I really like Seattle and Boulder. And those are like two really good cities, places to go watch games. Boulder, especially because it's like a very quick trip. It's like a you know, it's an hour and a half flight, and it's a really nice city, especially at that time of year, October 6th. So that probably would be the one.
Cool. Anything else, Dave?
I think that's it. I think that's it for me. I am totally informed on ASU now. Feel good about my pick. I think I'm going to change my pick. I've got them winning the South now.
Well, look, David, you feel good, and Ryan really can't lose because he staked out both sides, right? Like,
it's true. That's how Ryan never loses.
Like, ASU was really bad in pick six, and now ASU is going to do a lot better than six. So no matter what happens, Ryan, you're in a pretty good position.
I like it. I like that. That's you know, I'm sneaky smart, Chris. I think the disaster could be coming with Herm, but like I've said, I just want him to succeed. I don't see it happening, but he's done some good things, I think. So maybe it will. Maybe it'll work and I'll just be wrong.
Let me just finish this by building off of that point, okay? the questions about Herm are not things that would be problems in the first year. I mean, there could be some with, true, you know, clock management and, you know, whatever, like what you do in games situationally. But really the bigger questions about Herm are more about program building and about the big picture, like how you do all of these things when he has no experience doing them, right? It's the players love him. The transition from Graham to Herm is like nails on a chalkboard for years that have now no longer been they're now being replaced by like Mozart, okay? Like the players are in a great place, and this is like this reset button that's going to actually have them really inspired. And with the senior quarterback Emmanuel Wilkins and all the players they have around them, it's not the type of thing that Herm is going to like. What's he going to do? Like he's not. He wasn't a coordinator in his past. He's not going to do anything. The questions about Herm are, can he close on recruits? Can he program build and do all the things associated with that? And those are more like year two, year three, year four type questions.
True.
So I'll just leave you guys with that to think on. And now, Ryan, you can have ASU finishing last in the division, finishing in the middle of the division, and now somehow in a wide open division where there is no front runner, winning the division. And then you can look back on this, and no matter what happens, you look great.
Yeah. I just want ASU to come out of the tunnel like with their jerseys on backwards or something, you know, something like that. You know, Herm, that everyone can point to Herm and laugh. But you're right. I don't think it's year one problems. I think it's more down the road problems.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. And we'll talk about it every year. We'll talk about it five times a year.
It'll be fun.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right. That's Chris Cartman. Follow him on Twitter at Chris Cartman. Of course, he publishes sundevilsource.com. Nobody covers Arizona State better than Chris. Thank you so much for coming on, Chris. Great stuff.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. So we're going to go from Tempe to Tucson, and we're going to talk now some Arizona football with Jason Scheer. You can follow him on Twitter at Jason, S-C-H-E-E-R. He's the publisher of WildcatAuthority.com, of course, part of the 24/7 Sports Network. Been covering Arizona for many years. I don't want to give your age away, Jason, but you've been doing it a while, right?
It's been a bit, yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, great to have you. Wait, Ryan, who are we previewing here?
We're talking
Arizona Wildcats.
Come on. All right. I caught you that time, but let's
well, usually
that
we
down.
Talk a little first and then we get into the preview, but that's fine. We can move it along. I know you got stuff to do.
Whatever, as if you hadn't forgotten. All right, whatever.
I completely forgotten, yes.
Jason, it's good to have you on. Lot to cover with Arizona. I already made the joke with ASU, so I can't make it again. Obviously, there were a lot of changes for Arizona, somewhat unexpectedly, this offseason with Rich Rod no longer there. Kevin Sumlin coming in. Can you walk us through all of the coaching changes and what's new on staff in Tucson?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much everything's new on staff except for the defensive coordinator. Marcel Yates was retained by Kevin Sumlin. They have a history going back to Texas A&M, but Theron Hache, also the inside wide receivers coach, was retained. But other than that, he brought in his own guys. He brought in Noel Mazzoni, who's plenty familiar to Pac-12 fans. He brought in Demetrius Martin. He's got a couple of UCLA guys in there. Brought in the offensive line coach, Joe Gilbert, from the Indianapolis Colts. And he pretty much he had to build a staff really quickly because of the way that everything went down. So, he brought in a lot of familiar faces, and really the only guy that's coming back that was a recognizable name to Arizona fans was Marcel Yates, because even Aish was only there for a year. But he brought in Pac-12 experience, tried to bring in some West Coast guys and mix it up a little bit. And kind of, the big thing with his staff is just recruiting. They had to recruit. Every single guy has to recruit in some capacity. And, we won't know how good of a staff it is probably for at least a year, but a lot of new faces, though.
As far as returning starters on this team, some of the big names like Khalil Tate. I think a lot of young defensive pieces are coming back. What is the impact returning starters for Arizona this year?
Yeah, I mean, the defense wasn't great at times last year, but there's some good talent, and they're all back. Tony Fields is a guy where he led the team in tackles and was one of the better defensive players in the conference. Colin Schooler, so both linebackers are back, and they're really good. They returned Kylan Wilborn, who led the team in sacks. He's another guy. Those were all freshmen last year. So they're expecting a big jump in quality there. Arizona returns both corners. Lorenzo Burns and Jace Whitaker returns all their safeties. I mean, they pretty much return their entire defense. Derek Bowles, who's a defensive lineman, they return him. So on defense, they return a good chunk. On offense, too, really. There's some movement on the offensive line. There's some guys that left. Jacob Alsadek left, and he'll be a pretty big loss on the offensive line. But you take a look, Khalil Tate, obviously, the running backs, except for Nick Wilson, return wide receivers are pretty much all back. So in terms of returning players, I would think that, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would think that Arizona's pretty up there in the amount of guys that are coming back from last season.
I'm pretty familiar with Noel Mazzoni's scheme, and I don't have too many concerns about him being able to adapt it to Khalil Tate's kind of unique skill set. He obviously was successful with Brett Hundley, but what are you seeing from that offensive scheme and how it is adapting to Tate? And then also, if anything is changing defensively, I know they're retaining their coordinator, but if anything is changing schematically defensively, can you just talk about the scheme changes on both sides of the ball?
I think the biggest thing is that, like, Rich Rodriguez would basically let Khalil Tate run at will, pretty much. And I'm not sure. I mean, I'm pretty sure Mazzoni won't let him do that. I think we'll see more shorter and intermediate passes. That wasn't really a part of Khalil's Tate game plan. It was pretty much he was running or throwing deep or they were running with a running back. There wasn't any intermediate passes. And from what I understand, Noel Mazzoni has been working on making him an actual better passer as opposed to more of just an athlete than maybe he was last season. And he was an explosive athlete, and he obviously had a great season. But at the end of the day, he's got to learn how to throw the shorter and intermediate routes better. And I think Mazzoni's working with him. They claim, we haven't seen anything. They didn't open anything up to us. But they claim that the offense is going to be pretty similar. Maybe there's a little difference in the passing game, but in terms of running and all that and RPO. They'll still do it quite a bit. Defensively, it'll be interesting because Rich Rodriguez was known as a guy that micromanaged a lot. And I'm not sure Marcel Yates got to do everything that he wanted to do. Towards the end of the season, I think he did. He got the defense kind of changed. It was a lot more aggressive at the end of the season. But from what I understand, Marcel Yates is basically able to have more freedom defensively. And we don't really know what that'll look like. It remains to be seen. But I think what we'll see is he'll have a little more autonomy in that defense, and we'll see it kind of have more of a Marcel Yates touch. I think it'll remain really aggressive, though, because I don't think the talent necessarily is overall there. And the way to make up for that is by having an aggressive defense.
I'm pretty bullish, Jason, on the Wildcats this year. They're in my top three in the division. I could see them winning the South, you know, even with the coaching change. We talked to Chris Cartman last segment, and I've not been very high on Arizona State, but I could see them making a run now. They have a lot of people back. But I like everyone that Arizona's returning. It seems like Kevin Sumlin's going to come in and be able to not miss a beat. That's kind of my gut feel. You know, Khalil Tate and all the defensive people coming back. What are some of the schedule points, though, that could be a benefit for this team making a run or some kind of hindrance?
The schedule's actually, it works out great for Arizona. I mean, they miss Washington and Stanford, which are two teams that, you know, if you were looking at the entire conference, you wouldn't mind missing those two teams. At a conference, they have BYU and Southern Utah, two winnable games. I think the hardest at a conference game by far will be Houston because it's an 11 a.m. kickoff there, which means it's a 9 a.m. kickoff in Arizona. And so that obviously, anytime that happens, you look for the slow start and all that. But
I hate those.
Yeah, it's brutal, especially because Arizona, because of the heat and everything. I mean, when Arizona plays at home, you're talking 8 p.m. kickoffs every night. And so they're not used to those early morning kickoffs. So that'll be something to watch out for. But, I mean, the schedule lines up really nicely. USC they have at home. Oregon they have at home. ASU at home. And so really overall, when you look at the schedule, I mean, at Utah on a Friday night is a really difficult game in terms of going on the road. At UCLA, you know, UCLA may not be great this upcoming season, but Arizona just doesn't win at the Rose Bowl. So that's a game to watch out for. But when you take a look at the overall schedule and compare it to other teams in the Pac-12, I think Arizona, I don't want to say has it easy, but they caught a lot of breaks this season with the way their schedule lines up and having a new coach.
Looking at it, is there an easily identifiable trap game for you or a game that you think is going to be maybe unexpectedly tough for the Wildcats?
Yeah, I think that for me, they play USC at home on September 29th, and then the next week they have Cal at home. And the issue with that one is they have the Utah game right after that. So when you have kind of sandwiched in between the two, what should be the two best teams in the South, I could see Arizona kind of overlooking that game, and then they have the short week in Utah. So to me, when looking at the schedule, I think that game against California, even though it's at home, I think that's going to be a really tough game for Arizona to win because just the way the schedule works out.
Yeah, that is a good one. That's we don't know what to expect from the Bears. It could be a team that beats some good teams, loses some bad teams. So that's one you got to stay focused on if you're playing in between USC and Utah. Great point. What about the impact freshmen? Maybe redshirt freshmen or incoming freshmen from this recruiting class? I know it's a staff turnover, but is there anyone that you know potential fans should look out for that you haven't seen before with the Wildcats, but he could have a big year?
Well, there's one guy. He's a JC guy. He came on campus early, and Arizona needed big-time help on the defensive line. And PJ Johnson is a guy. He's actually related to DJ Johnson, who Pac-12 fans might be familiar with. I think he's at Oregon now. But he's 6'5", 320. And it's not fat. I mean, he is built really well. He's going to start on the defensive line from day one. He had a really impressive spring. The hope is that Arizona is actually going to have a pretty decent defensive line with him and Derek Bowles. He's a guy where, I mean, like from the first day he stepped on campus, he was running with the ones and twos. So he's a guy, he'll start. And then in terms of true freshman, Davon Coleman is a guy that the coaches really like. Safety slash, you know, kind of a stud position out of Texas, 6'2", 200. He's a guy during the summer I've heard a lot of good things about. And it'll be interesting because Arizona has quite a bit of talent at that position. But, you know, he's a guy where, from what I understand, he's so good that they're going to have to basically find a way to get him on the field. It'll be interesting to see if they do that at safety, linebacker, whatever it may be. But they like him quite a bit.
When you're kind of a – I mean, obviously, this is a team that's returning a ton of starters, a ton of depth from last year. But so maybe that allows you to focus a little bit more on assuming any practices are open, which may not be the case. But assuming any of them are, what are the position battles that are maybe going to be of most interest to Wildcat fans going in this year?
You know, to me, there's a couple that stick out. I think wide receiver is somewhat of a battle because not in a good way. I think the position is far and away I shouldn't say far and away, but it's one of the weaker positions. And beyond Sean Brown and Sean Poindexter, who are returning, Tony Ellison will get in there a little bit. I don't really know who's like the fourth or fifth receiver. I have no idea who's going to be those guys. It's going to be wide open. Keyshawn Johnson Jr. transferred to Arizona, but he's actually not on the roster yet. So we don't know if he'll be eligible or not. Sumlin won't comment on him, and he's up in the air. If he comes to Arizona, you know, and he's playing, I think he'll be in the mix. But wide receiver and cornerback, Arizona, it was just announced like 20 minutes ago, lost their third cornerback. His name's Tony Wallace, and he struggled with academics, and he won't be on the roster. So really, Arizona has like two corners this year. And so I'm not sure who's going to be those backup corners. Jace Whitaker and Lorenzo Burns are pretty good. But to me, Wallace was clearly the third best corner on the team, and he didn't qualify academically, so he's gone. So I think when you look at it, corner and wide receiver are probably there. Running back, you know, J.J. Taylor to me will be the backup, will be the starter. But beyond him, Nathan Tilford is a guy where people are wondering if he can finally step up and be that second running back like Arizona wants him to be, or even kind of emerge as a split starter type. But I'm taking a look at it. I think cornerback, anybody after those top two is going to be a heck of a competition because I'm not even sure there's more than two legitimate cornerbacks on the roster right now.
Wow. All right. So some potential problems there in the defensive. Not like there's a lot of wide receivers that are good in the Pac-12, right? That shouldn't be a big deal. What do you think? I think I might know one name you're going to mention, but what are the strengths of this Arizona Wildcat team?
Yeah, there's a guy named Khalil Tate who's pretty good. You know, the whole offense revolves around him. You know, if you're taking a look at the strength of the offense, it's pretty much him. There's some talent at running back with Taylor and hopefully Tilford, but really, I mean, he makes everything go. Like I mentioned, the wide receivers aren't great. The offensive line was probably a strength last year, but it lost a few guys. To me, you know, I think the biggest strength is what Arizona has at linebacker and safety. I think they're clearly the most depth is there. Kylan Wilbord at the stud position, Tony Fields, Colin Schooler. Those are guys that could play anywhere in the Pac-12. They're really good. Safety, they went out. They added some guys incoming in the freshman class. Like I mentioned, Davon Coleman. And then they returned Demetrius Flanagan Foles, who's been there for a while. Scotty Young will probably be back. And so when you take a look at the strengths, you know, to me, if I was picking two positions where I feel fine about it, it's probably linebacker, safety, and of course, quarterback. I mean, Khalil Tate is clearly the best player in the program right now.
And then on the other end, the weaknesses of the team, like the things they're going to have to figure out or mitigate in some way.
Yeah, like I mentioned, I mean, cornerback, now that they lost Wallace, and it was probably a concern before, but I mean, you lose your third cornerback, and you know, I'm sure they knew about it, but it came late to the point where they couldn't add any freshmen, and they actually added Javon Hill, the former UCLA commit, and he didn't qualify either. He's going to Arizona Western. And so, you know, they added guys that they hopefully would play at corner, and all of a sudden they're having some qualifying issues. And, you know, to me, that's out of all the positions that you want to be strong in on defense, cornerback in the Pac-12, it has to be up there. And when you look at the defense that Arizona has, it's probably the weakest position, which so that's going to be a huge concern for Arizona moving forward.
Jason, any other interesting news tidbits? I know you guys don't get a lot of access right now to Kevin Sumlin and the team. You got to, I guess, see him and hear him at Pac-12 Media Day. But anything else going on that the rest of the Pac-12 might want to know about when their team faces off against Arizona?
No, you know, in a way, I think the biggest storyline is like no one knows what is going on in terms of how they'll look or anything like that. I mean, he's, you know, Rich Rodriguez was really secretive with the media, but we had access and he gave a weekly injury report, which is great. But like, we don't have like the camp schedule and it starts on Friday. they're updating the roster like right now, and we haven't had any roster updates at all. And so, you know, we don't know really, like, players haven't been available. We don't really know what's going on with Kevin Sumlin. I mean, we've heard good things, but it's almost, you know, depending on the practice and the access we get, that it could be like the type of deal where, you know, people are asking me what Arizona is going to look like, and I may not even know until like the first game. It depends on what kind of access we get. So, you know, I will say that there's a lot of excitement in Arizona, especially now that they passed the there's beer sales in Arizona Stadium now.
Whoa. Nice.
So that's actually that. I probably should have led with that, beer and wine.
Yes.
I don't know how you kept it till this long.
Yeah. Beer and wine are being served in the stadium and in McHale Center for basketball too.
Wow. So
that'll be fun. But yeah, I mean, it's there's a lot of excitement. I just don't think anybody really knows what we're going to see come the first game.
We do have a couple of questions from one of our listeners, Anthony. He was asking us of all of the 247 contributors, and I'll ask you, but this is kind of a good question. What do you think the floor and the ceiling are this season for Arizona?
You know, I'll start with the floor. You know, I think Arizona, like, 4 or 5 wins probably. I mean, they probably beat BYU and Southern Utah, and then maybe they beat, like, an Oregon State, but they lose the more difficult games on their schedule. The team has trouble adjusting to the new coaching staff with Sumlin and all that. And, you know, really, when you think about it, Arizona's one injury away from being a bad football team. That's just the way it is with Khalil Tate. There's no real backup quarterback right now. I mean, Khalil Tate gets injured and it's pretty much all done. In terms of ceiling, this is a team that could win the Pac-12 South. I mean, if they go, they start 3-0. I know those aren't conference games, but they get some momentum. They start with Oregon State. All of a sudden, you're looking at that game at USC, where if they're able to steal, or against USC, where if they're able to steal that one, or even go to Utah a few weeks later and win that one at Utah, they're going to compete to win the Pac-12 South. Just the way that everything's going to line up. So I think the ceiling is reachable. I think the floor would be, you know, the bigger concern. I'd probably put them somewhere in between. I don't think they'll be too bad, and I don't think they'll probably win the South, but it's there for the taking.
I agree, Jason. I think it's a pretty wide range, and it could go from winning to finishing 5th or 6th. So it's we just don't know what to expect. And you're there all the time. You don't know what to expect, because you can't really see very much. So we appreciate you. Any insights you can give us is the more you get to learn. Is there a game, Anthony also wants to know, that you're looking forward to the most covering this year?
I think anytime USC comes to Arizona Stadium, it's fun because USC travels well. To Tucson, and Arizona players, a lot of them are from Southern California, and I don't know what Kevin Sumlin will say, but Rich Rod always used the shtick where, you know, USC didn't think you were good enough. Let's go prove them wrong. And like, he would always say that every time they played USC. And so, you know, Arizona fans, the players get really hyped, and those games are generally pretty fun. And for me, I'm going to try to make it out to Utah for that Friday night game. And I'm excited about that one if I get out there, because I think that place will be rocking, and depending what Arizona's schedule and record is, that could wind up being a game with huge implications for the Pac-12 South.
Cool. David, very anything cool. else?
No, I'm all out.
Awesome.
Good stuff, Jason. Thanks.
Appreciate you guys for having me.
Thanks so much, Jason. Cool. All right. Well, that was some good stuff. David, do you like what you heard from Jason and Chris?
Yeah, really informative stuff from both of the fellas. I'm feeling even better about having ASU in like my 3-way tie rather than dead last, like somebody else who hosts this podcast.
Oh yeah,
because Chris gave a lot of valuable information, especially about that offense. And that offense sounds like it could be pretty damn good this year. And then Arizona, I mean, obviously Jason only has so much to go on since they haven't been able to really do anything at practice, but I think nothing to discount what a lot of us think, which is that Arizona could be really good this year thanks to that favorable schedule and Khalil Tate.
Yeah. You know, I think we both each have a dud pick, you picking Utah 5th and me picking Arizona State last, although the media agreed with me, but I don't feel good about that one at all.
I still feel pretty good about my Utah thing because it's not based on their talent on the team or anything weird. It is just that schedule, which is just so brutal.
Speaking of dumb things, we had Orange Bowl Matt tweet us that where we were talking about, someone asked us a question who was going to lead the league in interceptions. And I think I had brought up Steven Montez from Colorado, and he had tweeted that, what was it? He had like 170 throws in a row without an interception last year, but he still ended up with 9 interceptions and 5 fumbles. He only lost one of them, but it's not like he didn't turn the ball over, but he had a good streak. So, but that was that. That's Matt T. So I gave him that.
Okay, so it was halfway dumb. We were halfway dumb.
It's still a lot of picks, you know. And
yeah, he was good for a while, and then he was really not good for a little bit longer after that, right? Yeah. That's so, what we're saying?
I think that's, yeah. So I don't think it was unreasonable. If, like, he threw no picks last year and we picked him to you know, be one of the leaders or just, you know, it's a hypothetical. They were just, like, trying to figure something out. But it's not
right.
Like,
and if you remember that segment, it was at the end, I want to say, of that show. And we were basing it off of, like, really, really contorted logic that had nothing to do with actually looking at stats. So
right,
I feel pretty good about us ending up with those three. I'd actually still – I can't even remember the three we picked. I think it was the Cal quarterback, Bowers, Montez, and then who was the other one that we said might?
Let's see. It was – I forget who it was.
Whoever ends up Washington State's quarterback? Was
yeah,
that
I
it?
Think maybe that was the one. Yeah,
I don't know. Whoever. Yeah. But anyway, I feel pretty good about it.
Well, we have kind of a special guest here, Chloe, Chrisicopoulos. Man, I got that wrong.
You're close.
Yeah, all right, I got to take you behind the curtain real quick. Ryan actually confirmed her last name several times before we jumped back on the air, and he still screwed it up. That was incredible.
My brain does not work from second to second, so it's just not. So I apologize, Chloe.
It's okay. When I was doing the piece from Pac-12 Media Day, I had to Google all the names and listen over and over again, and I'm still not sure if I got all of them right, but I tried.
You did not. Well, so we'll introduce. So Chloe was down there at Pac-12 Media Day, and last year, if you remember, I went and asked like all the coaches something about the new rule changes, and we put that audio up, and I was like, so this time we had Chloe there, so we had her go to all the players and ask a couple questions that Dave, you actually came up with. So yeah, there was a few name screw-ups there. I think you called Manny Wilkins like Sammy Wilkins, and I think Theo Howard became somebody else Howard. It wasn't Theo, it was something else, so that's okay.
That's a pretty good average. What is that? That's... You know, there were 24 players there, screwing up 2 of them. That's great. That's better than we'd ever do.
Especially if talking to them for the first time. Like, you don't know any of these guys, right? So, yeah.
No, a few. I know Porter and Cam.
Okay, well, you know,
the USC guys.
Yeah. So Chloe's a graduate student at USC now, yes. And is on the rowing team, so.
TBD. Was on the rowing team, might still be on the rowing team. We're still... deciding.
Gotcha. Well, we appreciate the help. We'll play that Chloe's audio that she put together and edited herself and everything. So we'll play that at the end. But David, I thought we should probably answer a few questions first.
Yeah. Should I start with Matthew, an actual Stanford fan? He titles his
Wait,
email.
What? That can't be right. Is that the spam folder?
I think it
what?
Must be some sort of joke. Let's dive in and see. All right. This is from Matthew in Mountain View. So the plot thickens.
I used to live in Mountain View, by the way, Matthew.
This makes sense then if he's a Stanford fan. So these are 2 points of data now we have on Matthew. So he says, note, I am several episodes behind on the podcast and desperately trying to catch up. If that makes this email obsolete, then please ignore and or mock me for listening to old podcasts. Well, Matthew, we'd actually have to read the emails beforehand to determine whether or not they're obsolete, and we don't do that. So here we go. Hi, Ryan and Dave. As a longtime listener of the podcast, I just wanted to shout and point out that, yes, there are Stanford fans that listen to your show. I know I'm not the only one. How do I know? Last year, during the Stanford-Washington game, Jake Browning made a poor throw, and a nearby fan turned to me and said, well, he's really not that bad. He's actually one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the Pac-12.
They used our joke? That's amazing.
That is so good. Oh, that makes me so happy. Basically, you guys have created an inside joke that is not only actually funny, feels weird to acknowledge that, must have been Ryan's idea first, but also serves as a secret code enabling us podcast listeners to identify each other without exposing ourselves to the unwashed masses. Ryan, please let your wife know that Stanford isn't that bad. I suspect she thinks that all Stanford fans are rich elitist snobs. Definitely not true. Some of us are not rich. keep up the good work, Ryan, from Matthew in Mountain View, California. I love this is how you write an email, everyone. Yeah. Definitely backhanded insults toward me and Jake Browning jokes, and identify yourself as an obscure fan of a very strange football team.
Yeah, Matthew, I used to live on Church Street up in Mountain View when I engineering days when I worked up there in Silicon Valley. That's where I lived for about a year and a half or so. There's like a cool brewery and stuff in Mountain View. There's some cool stuff there. But yeah, so I think he's a real guy. I think this is a real thing.
I think it's not fake.
Yeah, he definitely hit all the points. Great email. That's an all-timer, I would think. What do you think?
It's pretty good. That's pretty solid. Identifying that there are people out there who actually are like using our jokes out in the wild.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. That's fun.
It was funny. So one of the talks, I don't know if we talked about this in the last show, but yeah, one of the talks at Pac-12 Media Day, if you talk to some of the NFL guys, is like, you looked at Justin Herbert, that looked like an NFL dude. You looked at Jake Browning, didn't think so as much. Doesn't mean he's not going to make it, but Herbert definitely looks the part. So I think, you know, Browning's going to have an uphill climb, I think, once he gets to the NFL. We wish him the best. You hope he makes it. But I like that our jokes are propagating throughout the listenership across the Pac-12 footprint.
Absolutely. Absolutely, as they should.
Joe Blow wrote us. There's a link in this. Is this going to be bad? Hopefully not. Arizona basketball ID theft to watch game. He says, hey, fellas, love the podcast. Thanks for making my week. I just thought I'd share an article about the links somebody would go to watch an Arizona basketball game. He doesn't describe it. He doesn't say what's in there. And there's just a link. So I don't know what we're going to do with this.
So the headline is cops say man altered Lake Delton restaurant's cable package to watch Arizona Wildcats basketball game.
Wow.
So does that mean he like I am intrigued because does that mean he called in to change their cable package just so he could watch this game?
Yeah, so if he worked there or had some capacity.
Okay, yes, he did. He called Charter Spectrum just as a guy, but he claimed to be okay, this is awesome. So he claimed to be the, if I'm reading this correctly, because I'm reading while I talk, which is difficult.
No, that's fine.
He claimed to be the restaurant employee trying to upgrade their cable package so he could watch Arizona basketball games. That is sweet.
That is pretty good.
He's probably going to prison, but that is really cool.
That's a prisonable offense, like to call.
I mean, he was booked and released on a $2,000 signature bond. So, you know, his next court date is on July 31st. So we'll be rooting for you, man.
Nice. So, now, Chloe, I don't know if you know this, but some of the schools in the Pac-12 actually play basketball, too. So
And some of them care.
Yes. Do you ever go to a game? Like,
I do, actually, occasionally. Definitely more of a football fan, but I relate to him because last year we only have one Pac-12 network subscription in my family, which is my mom's, obviously, because she pays for it. So whenever the games were on and I either didn't go or they were away, I would always text her and be like, hey, mom, you gonna watch the game? So I feel his pain because I didn't want to pay for a subscription, but I obviously wanted to watch.
Yeah. So. Is it only one person at a time can watch or something?
So I would have to buy my own subscription, and I don't buy subscriptions because I'm a millennial.
Right.
I don't do those things.
I just cut the cord, Chloe. So I don't know, millennials never had a cord, but like there's, yeah. So I have like the Roku. I think we're doing the Hulu TV, but they don't have Pac-12 Network either. So I'm kind of screwed. I don't know.
It's a struggle.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody has Pac-12 Network. It's just an issue.
That's kind of why we're here, like this podcast, you know?
Yeah, we're taking the place. We're actually going to live stream the games. I'll just start shouting about them.
And David, you're thinking about cutting the cord too, right?
Yes, but it sounds like UVerse might get retained. They might retain the Pac-12 Network, so then I will not the case.
Yeah, you're on AT&T. Okay, cool.
Yeah. All right. This is from Frank in Sacramento.
Okay.
All right, so he says which XTV couch will be a bigger disaster. I'm thinking we mean coach here.
Yeah, you know what?
But But, like, I mean, if you got, like, an old couch from, like, a TV set, I imagine that would be kind of a
people
disaster.
Type fast, you know.
Might smell weird. Who knows? Anyway, which XTV coach will be a bigger disaster? Ryan and Dave, which XTV analyst will be a bigger disaster as returning coach? Herm Edwards at Arizona State or John Gruden at the Raiders?
Wow. Thanks, Frank, for that. Similar. I mean, obviously pretty similar, right?
Yeah.
Except that John Gruden won a Super Bowl. So John Gruden had way, way, way more success than Herm Edwards did in his career, but it's been a long time. I think you could kind of expect Herm Edwards to not do well. And if he does pretty good, like what if they finish third in the conference this year and get better next year? It's like, that's all like gravy. Like I think even ASU fans at this point are like, they're not really expecting a whole lot, but you expect a lot from John Gruden. So, and anything short of a Super Bowl with the Raiders, like that might be a disappointment. So I think Gruden might be the bigger disaster. What do you think?
I mean, obviously not. I mean, Herm Edwards, it wasn't.
I'm trying.
Herm Edwards was. All right, let me go back to the record here. 20 games under 500 in the NFL. Gruden was 15 games over 500. Two just completely different categories of coach. Both haven't coached in exactly 10 years. One's trying to do something entirely new in Herm Edwards, and the other one is going back to one of the places he's already coached in a league that, I mean, it's changed, but it is still similar to how it has always been. Gruden has a real chance for success there in the long term. I question whether I agree with Cartman that any problems with Herm won't necessarily show up in year one, but I think they're definitely going to show up in year two and year three and year four and so on if there is a year four. So yes, Herm Edwards will 100% be the biggest disaster.
I guess if I'm looking at that with expectations, there's no expectations with Herm. You expect him to be a disaster. So I don't know how.
Tell ASU fans that there's no expectations. I mean, they have expectations, even if it's not tied to the coach. And if he sucks, and if they go, 3-9 in back-to-back years starting next year,
yeah,
that'll be a disaster for them.
But what if they both? Okay, so what if Gruden never makes the playoffs and Herm just, maybe has a decent year this year and then sucks after that. Like, would you say Gruden's a bigger disaster just because the expectations for him were higher?
No, I really don't. And I think the NFL is so weird. I mean, it's going to be hard. In that scenario where he doesn't make the playoffs for like 3 years and they're like kind of bad doing it, I think that's not great. But I don't know. I'm speaking as somebody who doesn't really watch the NFL at all. Like, I don't care at all. So I can't really tie any emotional value, like disaster, to anything that happens in the NFL. Whereas, like, there's ASU fans out there who are, like, living and dying with that team. And if Herm goes out there and they go, like, 3-9 in a couple of years, that's a disaster.
Yeah.
Losing like 9 games in the NFL isn't a disaster for anybody.
Well, what if you pay your coach $10 million a year and lose 9 games? Then is that a
whatever? That league prints money.
That league is true.
Like just money falling off of all of these people.
All right. What do you have an opinion on that one, Chloe? Do you agree with Dave or me?
Ryan, I think I'm going to have to go with you.
Really? Yes.
Yeah.
I gave her $5 into the table for that.
Yeah, this seems like the buttering up the employer here.
I wish. This is not paid, so it's this I do in my free time for fun.
All right. Should we go to Big Nick?
Yeah, do it.
He says he has a statement / question and comment. So pretty much covers everything. Hi, this is Nick from Cyprus, a.k.a. Big Nick, 21 USC from the P. First, shout out to Ryan Abraham and David. David ruined his life like post-marriage Tiger Woods. Wow.
Wow.
So that was David ruined his life like post-marriage Tiger Woods. All right.
But why the second David?
I don't know. I think it's Dave Woods, but then in the middle is the David ruined his life like post-marriage Tiger Woods in the middle. But he didn't put quotes in there. But I assume that's what he's going
for. But it should
just
be Dave ruined his life like post-marriage Tiger Woods would.
Yes, I think that would be good. All right.
Well, anyway. I applaud the creativity, for sure.
Statement, since you guys gave a ceiling and a floor for both Utah and Colorado, I can see Utah winning 8 games. It's a decent season, and Colorado 7. I don't know if that – is that a ceiling or a floor for them? I assume that's a
– I don't know.
I think it's a ceiling for Colorado. I wouldn't say there's a ceiling for Utah since I picked them to win the South, but I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. Oh, crap. He had a question for our guest.
Nick's a long-time enough listener to know that we're not reading these ahead of time, yes. So this is really his fault.
Right. Nick, we totally blame you. But his question for the U of A guy, which happens to be Jason Shear, where to hang out in Tucson? I'll be there for the USC game in late September and want to know where I can have fun and be mischievous. LOL. So we'll have to ask Jason for that. Maybe tweet Nick. Maybe you want to tweet Jason, or we could tweet him out. Like where's
No, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pretend to be an expert on Tucson.
Okay, you do that.
All right, so bars in Tucson. Let's see. We've got the Arizona Beer House.
Okay.
On South Cobb Road in Tucson. You should go there, Nick. Or maybe Casa Film Bar on 2905 East Speedway Boulevard. 4.5 stars on Yelp, 46 reviews. This is pretty solid.
Nice.
You can get a nice cocktail at the Shelter Cocktail Lounge on East Grant Road. Check that out. Recommended by anonymous users on Yelp. Yeah, there's a lot for you to do out there, Nick.
Have you been out there, Chloe? Do you like any place? Or?
I have not been out to Arizona. I would recommend you stay inside, though. It's probably going to be pretty hot.
Yeah, that's...
So
with air conditioning.
Yeah.
That
would be my recommendation.
You go, like, a lot of the... If you've not been, and there's a lot of outdoor seating. Like, you go to Tempe, it's awesome. But if it's in the summer, like, you can't use it. Like, there's mist, there's everything going, but there's no way you can sit out there and be comfortable, so... Arizona State guy, so he's talking about Chris Cartman. I don't know if there's a question or more of a statement. How is ASU... how come they don't play better and recruit better with the best looking females in the Pac-12 and low academic standards? That's an interesting one. I don't know. Is that an insult, Chloe?
I think that is an insult. Has he been to USC? Because there are some very attractive females there. I mean, our academic standards are higher, but doesn't that make a better female mate? You know, smarter, prettier.
Smarter ones.
Yeah.
Well, the best part about all of this is whenever anybody asks a question like this, it's just complete telling on themselves. Because, maybe that's Nick's criteria for picking a school. And, like, you'll see this topic crop up on our message boards pretty frequently. And it's like, what are these kids thinking? Why aren't they all going to San Diego State or Arizona State? And it's like, well, I mean, maybe they have other priorities in life. I mean, maybe they're just a little bit different from what you're thinking about as, like, a 45-year-old guy on a message board.
Yeah.
I don't know.
ASU, though, is like we've always thought of them as kind of a sleeping giant because there's, you know, a lot of potential to get talent there. You know, it's got this NFL kind of vibe to it. They could, you know, be really good. So we'll see. I don't think they picked the right coach to get over the hump, but who knows?
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Nick. Sorry we didn't get to ask your questions to our experts, but hopefully you got better good answers just from us.
I gave him the best that Yelp has to offer.
Yeah.
All right. This is from Lone Star Dog, Media Day 6-pack. Lone Star Dog here again, woofing for the D-Wags in Stockholm. An international question, Ryan. One of your faves.
I love that.
A true international one. Thanks for sidestepping my question last time by blaming bad coaching hires. That is a symptom of a lot of broken things, not the sole cause, but I also got the vibe you're tired of talking about it. I do not in any way remember Brian's first question.
Yeah. Brian, one thing you got to remember, even though it's international, we're going to treat you with love because, you know, it's all the way from Stockholm. But don't think we remember what we said 10 minutes ago, let alone 3 shows ago. So you got to repeat what we're talking.
Again, Ryan confirmed Chrissy's last name off air and then a minute later on air was unable to replicate that. So just keep that in your brain noodle.
Yeah.
All right.
And Dave just called Chloe Chrissy, so that's better too. So
well, yeah, at least you got my last name right.
But like, I feel like your last name is a complete name on its own too, because you've got Chrissy Coppolis. Like that sounds like a fine Greek name too, right?
It could be, right? Your last name could be a full name.
No, some people think that. They really do.
including me. all right. So here we go. I meant to get this question in right after Media Day, but vacation happened. It has been discussed, but the whole Media Day event was yet again embarrassing, but even worse, a low-budget remake of previous years. At some point, the wacky prop photo booth will graciously die in a dumpster fire. I watched 5 to 20 minutes of each of the coach pressers on YouTube and was reminded all over again how boring, flat, and even borderline serial killery, goodbye Coach Smith, some of the coaches are. To the belated Media Day related question, hypothetical scenario. You each have a six-pack of Zima or whatever you LA guys drink. You logically take one and have five left to share. Which coaches would you want to join you? Only five, based on whatever criteria deemed important. Logically, the seven omitted are assumed to be stupid, boring, and or on the spectrum. Hi, Coach Leach. Thanks for reading my question and possibly answering.
Star Dog. Okay, so we have six Zimas. We each do, six, right? Zimas. We can. It's not like we have to share our Zimas.
Yeah, we can each pick a group of five. Or, we can share a six-pack together and have just four coaches. But, you know, I think we'd take five coaches here.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to rule out let's just rule some guys out first. So Kevin Sumlin, boring.
Really, that though? I think he'd be a fun drinking buddy, though.
Feels a little boring, but okay. All right.
Well, the fact that he's locking out the media, let's lock him out. He's not coming with us.
Let's lock him out. Kyle Whittingham seems pretty boring to me.
Yeah, like if we're going to go hunt bears, yes, but not drink Zimas.
Yeah. Utah.
Yeah.
You hunt bears.
That's what you do in Utah. He like skis every day and stuff like that.
Does Justin Wilcox party?
Young, good looking. If Nick wanted to, attract some of those ASU co-eds or something, you'd want a Justin Wilcox with you. Young, I think he'd be kind of fun to go out.
Okay,
with.
All right. So we'll say Justin Wilcox.
But he's kind of boring too, though. He's kind of this boring guy. But I don't know.
All right. Let's just put our cards on the table. Most football coaches are hellishly boring.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, bad. So bad. All right. But Justin Wilcox. All right. He can come. I'll take David Shaw too. I think he might be fun.
Yeah. No, I would. There would be some intellectual discussions over Zima, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He'll want to talk some things over a nice cold Zima. Jonathan Smith, I'm going to say no. Say no on Jonathan Smith.
Yeah, I mean he was a player not that long ago, but I didn't really get a great vibe from him at Media Day. Just as far as it's going to take him a little while, maybe in a couple years, but probably not right now.
His name just sounds boring, like. Jonathan Smith?
Yeah, right?
Who wants to hang out with John Smith?
Buddy. Nobody. Not even Pocahontas. all right. Mario Cristobal. I think he's got to be a yes here.
If you have a former offensive line guys are fun. Yes. I would go. He's in.
Okay. I'm going to say no Chris Peterson, no Mike McIntyre.
Yeah, Chris Peterson, no.
Boring. Just boring.
Yeah, Mike... Yeah, I'm going to say no on McIntyre, too.
The question for me is Leach. I'm a little sour on Leach just from, I think he's just a little too off the reservation, and I think that would, make a drinking experience way, way too just, irritating. But you might have a different opinion.
I think I would take – you want to learn more about Pocahontas, like you just mentioned? I think he would tell you.
I've learned enough. I know enough to make one reference to Pocahontas, which is the max that we need in a single episode of the show.
And was that knowledge from, the movie that you were showing your kids, or was it from, actual
– See, that's the question, because I've got a little bit of Pocahontas knowledge in there, because I've got – there was John Smith, and then there was also John Rolfe, right?
Okay.
So there were the two guys, but I don't know if that comes from history or from the movie. So, yeah, it's all just a muddle now.
Okay.
I think I would say
yes, he would, because there would be something interesting that would come of it.
Well, who are the remaining options? I mean, obviously Herm gets a spot. We haven't even talked about
him. Yeah, you got to put Herm in there.
And then it's Helton and Chip Kelly.
I mean, Clay's one of the nicest guys, but just, I don't think he would bring much to the table as far as make it interesting. Yeah.
Chip. So the final spot for me is really between Chip Kelly and Mike Leach.
Is it? Do we have five?
I don't think you have five. I think you
guys. No, we've got Wilcox, we've got Shaw, we've got Cristobal, we've got Herm.
Okay, so there's four, and then we need one more. I think I would pick Leach over Chip Kelly, but what do you think? You think Chip Kelly?
I'm gonna go with the hometown pick here.
All right,
Chip Kelly. Come on.
I mean, he could bring some. Oh wait, no, you guys are already bringing the alcohol. He just got a great contract, so he could bring some nice alcohol.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. He could buy us as much Zima as we can drink.
That's true. He's got a good contract.
Where do you even buy Zima these days?
I don't even know what Zima is.
I love this. Okay, so this is before when I was in school. Like, this was a clear alcoholic beverage. So it was like post wine cooler days. But this was like something new that girls could drink. So it was kind of like, I forget. What, do you know what's in it, Dave? It's not like beer, but it's a clear beverage. And it became like popular for.
It's like a malt. It's a malt beverage.
Okay.
I don't know a good way to describe it. Is it somewhat like a Smirnoff Ice?
That's what I was thinking when you were describing it, like a clear liquid that girls like to drink that doesn't taste awful, but also like tastes awful.
I think it tasted awful, but it was popular for a while, and then it became like a joke, you know. So that's why it's coming up here. Is it still a joke? But I think it still exists. I think I've seen it.
Like, so I'll give you the history here. Its production in the United States ceased in October 2008, but Miller Coors, I guess that's the conglomerate company that owns all this stuff now. They did a limited release last year.
Okay. So
you might have seen it then.
But not really. Okay. So it's been basically gone for a decade.
Yeah. But we're still making jokes about it because this podcast is really up on the times.
So Chloe, unless you were like buying it as an 11-year-old or something, then probably you don't know what it is. That's okay. You know, that's why we're here. That's why the older people are here, to tell you stuff that happened not that long ago, but stuff that you wouldn't know or remember.
Okay, so that's the definitive group. We've got Justin Wilcox, David Shaw, Mario Cristobal, Herm Edwards, and then one of Mike Leach or Chip Kelly.
Yeah. Let us know. Tweet us if you'd rather have Mike Leach or Chip Kelly. Chloe, would you have a preference? Which one would you like of those two?
I said Chip Kelly because of his contract.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. That's
so he
point.
Can't bring alcohol according to the stipulations in this email, but he could bring some fun snacks, you know,
yes.
Maybe some oysters, you know, whatever, like something cool.
Some caviar to go with that Zima.
Something fancy like, you know, oh my God. I think did you guys see, like, I tweeted out when I went back to Boston, like there's a Market Basket. It's kind of like a discount a grocery store my mom goes to and stuff. We would go there. I go there, $5 a pound lobster. Like, it's insane. Like, how, and they cook it for you right there. So we just had like a lobster feast at night. You couldn't get that out here, man. So,
no.
So maybe we'll have Chip Kelly bring some lobsters, the expensive kinds from out here.
A little surf and turf.
I like that, you know?
Yeah. Be classy with our Zimas.
The Zimas, yeah. this is Zima party. I'm kind of looking forward to this now. Can we pull this off? You know,
I'll send the invites.
I think we can make this happen.
who would say, okay, of all those, if we sent an invite, like we sent an Evite out, is that still a thing?
They're not Evites are not a thing.
Damn. Okay.
Wow.
Maybe it's like a Google Calendar invite.
Okay.
We could do that.
So we need people that know what's going on in the real world now, David. So it's nice that Chloe's here. If we sent out,
you dropped an Evite, which I think predates. I think that predates Facebook.
Yeah. I used Evites when I was in like middle school for my birthday parties.
There you go.
So
wait. When was that? I want to horrify all the listeners.
Like 3 years ago.
Hey, now I'm getting my grad degree.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
I'm 22, so I was in elementary school middle school in 2008.
So 10 years ago, yeah.
So when Herm Edwards was last a coach.
Yes, and when Zima was a thing.
Yeah.
Is that what our next, like, we should do that as a tagline for the show, is like, Herm Edwards, last time he was coaching, Zima was available. Now I've lost my turn. What were we talking about there? What was all okay? So if we sent out an Evite or a Google Calendar or whatever, these guys are older. They might want Evites. Who would be the most likely of our five or six selected to say yes?
Oh, Leach.
Leach would.
Yeah, no, and that's no question. Like, he would respond in about 5 minutes if you sent that right now.
I like it.
Yeah.
So, so does that give him the edge over Chip Kelly because he's more, you know, reachable?
No, and... I mean, I don't like the reek of desperation there. I don't want somebody responding that quickly to an invitation ever.
Nice. Not an Evite. All right. I've learned a lot this show.
Yeah.
I think. Okay. Well, we went about an hour and a half, but we still got like 12 minutes left because we got Chloe's segment from Pac-12 Media Day come up. Anything you want to say before we play the segment for everyone, Chloe?
I would say that this was an interesting thing to do because some guys were great, gave me like awesome answers, and then some guys were surprisingly awful and told me
welcome to interviewing.
They told me they didn't watch other people or like didn't watch film or only paid attention to themselves, and I feel like that's a big problem.
Yeah, I think it's a disingenuous answer.
It's just lying. They're taught to like lie and not say anything interesting. That's all they're doing.
That's not very nice.
I mean,
it's horrendous. Whatever this like culture is, if you just don't say anything interesting ever, it's awful.
Yeah. And Dave came up with some good questions. Like I texted him like, hey, what do you want to do here? And what was one?
Once I responded.
Yeah. Well, you didn't really, he doesn't respond all that much. But when you're asking them to pick somebody else, like, you know, from the, you know, who's going to win the other division? Who's the best quarterback outside of the quarterback on your team? Some guys will say stuff, but other guys just, it's like they don't even want to branch out there and say something because they might insult somebody or something. It's tough. But some of the guys gave some good answers, but like you said, a lot of them just, they were like nothing.
Yeah.
But that's where we live. But Chloe gave it her best shot. I think she got some good answers there. She edited it all, put it all together. So thanks, Chloe, for that. All right. So we'll sign off here and then I'll play you that piece. Dave, any final words?
None. We'll be back with the North stuff next week.
Yeah, we'll do. We'll figure out who's going to go next, but we'll do North. We got six teams left, so three more episodes of our previews, and then before you know it, it'll be the football season. So that's David Woods. Chloe, thanks so much for joining us and doing this, and I'm Ryan Abraham, and here's Chloe's segment from Pac-12 Media Day.
I'm intern Chloe Christakopoulos with USCFootball.com. I attended Pac-12 Media Day in Hollywood and was able to talk to the players that represented their respective teams. I asked them some tough questions about the conference. The first was who they think the best quarterback in the Pac-12 is, and it can't be on their team. For a lot of the guys, it was really tough to pick with all of the talent. Stanford's defensive back, Elijah Holder, thought,
I'm unsure. I feel like Pac-12 is just kind of full of really talented quarterbacks. I feel like that's why, that's like something the Pac-12 is known for, you know, producing, you know, high grade, high talented quarterbacks. And I'm excited for this season because, I mean, a lot of talented quarterbacks means a lot of throws to be made, which means a lot of opportunities for me to make. So I'm excited for the season for all those quarterbacks.
USC's linebacker Cameron Smith agreed.
There are a lot of, you know, really good quarterbacks this year. I mean, I think they all offer something different. You know, KJ Costello came in really late last year and blew it up. And I feel like that's happens a lot with Stanford. They find their identity a little bit late and then they just blow up. And you know, they're going to be a really great team this year. Khalil Tate again kind of came onto the scene a little bit later and he's absolutely blown up this entire country. And then you go up to open north to Oregon with Herbert, and there's great talent all around, and I think we're just looking forward to playing these guys and Sunday or Saturdays with them, and it's gonna be fun.
A lot of the guys said Browning. WSU's wide receiver and punter Kyle Sweet thought so.
I'd say Jake Browning. You know, unfortunately, being a UW guy, I hate to say it, but you know, I give credit to him. He's a good quarterback.
So did ASU's quarterback Sammy Wilkins.
I think that besides saying myself, I would say that winning is everything, and I think that probably Jake Browning would say that.
Stanford's wide receiver JJ Arcega-Whiteside agreed.
Probably Jake Browning, he's very solid. You can tell he's very commanding on his offense. We didn't get a chance to play against Herbert. I've heard a lot of good things about him. He's probably going to be pretty good too.
Oregon State's offensive lineman Brake Brandel was also in agreement.
I mean, I'd say Browning, just because he's got the experience and he's been on those stages. He's proven himself, so I'd probably have to say Browning.
And finally, Arizona State wide receiver N'Keal Harry also said Browning.
Probably Jake Browning.
USC's lineman Porter Gustin agreed about Browning, but also added Khalil Tate to his list.
Oh, that's tough. I mean, those two guys that I mentioned earlier, you know, Khalil Tate and Browning, I think they're both special. Khalil's able to hurt you on the ground and in the air, which is something that's really hard for defenses to prepare for. And like I said, Browning's, you know, he's been great. You know, every year he's been playing there. We played him one. We played him that one year, and he was able to do some special things. So, I mean, there's a lot of talent in the Pac-12, but those two guys specifically jump out to me.
When I asked Tate the question, he just said he focused on his own game.
And I try not to be much like the other guys.
And then, a few of the guys thought the young quarterback from Oregon was the one to look out for. Oregon State linebacker Key Wetzel liked him.
I probably have to say Justin Herbert at Oregon, him being, you know, such a young guy, but at the same time, so mature in his football. His IQ in football is outstanding, and he's an athlete, you know, he's a big guy, can throw the ball real well, can move out of the pocket and stuff like that, so I probably have to say he's the best one.
And so did Utah linebacker Chase Hansen.
Oregon.
Herbert.
He is a stud.
The second question I asked these guys was who was their favorite opposing player to watch in the conference. Bryce Love was a favorite. Linebacker Brake Brandel from OSU thought so.
Probably Bryce Love. I mean, explosive guy. Gets out in the open field and makes the team's pay, so he's fun to watch.
So did UCLA wide receiver Theo Howard.
I like to watch Bryce Love a lot. I mean, obviously, he was up for the Heisman, almost won it. He's a great guy, personality-wise, and obviously, he did a lot of damage to us last year running the ball, so I definitely would say him.
Oregon State linebacker Key Wetzel agreed.
I probably have to say Bryce Love. He's definitely, like, an electrifying player. And I was kind of bummed that I didn't get to play against him last year because he was injured. But at the same time, I wasn't. I didn't have to deal with him. But he's definitely an electrifying player in the pack.
Colorado quarterback Steven Montez felt the same.
Bryce Love is a good player. Whatever Pac-12 game is on, I usually watch it. I just don't really like focus in on specific players.
As did another UCLA player, linebacker Josh Woods. He also had a special shout out to a few USC players.
I watch a lot of defense, so I mean, I like watching all the linebackers in the Pac-12. Guys like Cameron Porter, you know, other guys like that. But offensively, Bryce Love. I like how much heart he has. I've seen him battle through injuries last year from a distance. Just seeing how he went through that with his ankle and stuff like that. Stuff like that's really inspiring.
Cameron Smith was also singled out by Cal's linebacker, Jordan Kunezic.
I love watching my boy Cam Smith just because we play linebacker. I played football with him when I was 6 years old. We played together my first 2 years of football, or our first 2 years of football. So to be able to watch him and to be able to watch his success and his growth over the years, and just to see him at this level and the impact he has and the opportunities he's being presented, it just fills my heart with joy just because I care about him, and he's a great guy, and he deserves all the success that is coming his way. So I love watching him just because it makes me happy knowing that we came a long way from playing when we were 6 years old to now.
Jake Browning had his own opinion with Khalil Tate and Miles Gaskin.
I like watching Khalil Tate just because we got such different styles a little bit, and watching him run all over the place is pretty cool. But other than that, I mean, I kind of like watching Miles Gaskin run for touchdowns. That's kind of fun.
And his teammate and defensive back, JoJo McIntosh, also said Gaskin.
Miles Gaskin. Yeah, every time he touches the ball, you know something's going to happen. Whether it's this play or the next play, he's going to make something happen.
Utah's offensive lineman, Lo Falamaka, focuses on his own game.
Yeah, really just focus on my own game. I don't do too much watching. Besides, like, when we're watching film,
film. Obviously, that's the difference is like, you know, it's for a game. I never really just watched other players just to be like, oh, amazing highlights.
The last question I asked was, who will win the opposite division? So, if they play in the Pac-12 South, who will win the North? A lot of guys think there is too much talent in the Pac-12 to know. USC's linebacker Cameron Smith thought so.
I think I was talking from there, and we have, I feel like there's so much depth and such great talent in all of Pac-12 right now. You never really know what's going to happen on Saturdays. And that's the cool part about, you know, Pac-12 football. You just never know who's gonna take it and who ends up playing better than the other that day. So you never know, and I think we got so much talent in all of the Pac-12, and I'm excited to see how this season plays out.
Stanford's J.J. Arcega-Whiteside agreed.
It's up in the air. It could be anybody, really. It's funny because there's always like two or three teams that are not supposed to do good that, you know, obviously people rank them as like, yeah, they're having a bad year, a good year, whatever, and end up doing really well. Vice versa, there's always teams that are supposed to be the best, the top dog, and don't do good. And it's just the pressure on four years, it's the kind of talent we have, not about how good you are, how good you play.
Cal's linebacker Jordan Kunezic thought the Pac-12 South was super strong.
There's a lot of great teams in the Pac-12 South. SC is a great team. Colorado, Utah, Arizona State, all those teams are really good. So UCLA, I don't really know who's going to win. I know it's going to be a very competitive year this year in the Pac-12, both in the North and the South. So I'm excited to get ready, get ready for the season.
Washington's defensive back, JoJo McIntosh, thinks the South is too competitive too.
I don't know. The South is a tough league. They got a lot of competitors. Everybody competes. Anybody can beat anybody. So I really don't know.
And UCLA's wide receiver Theo Woods thinks the title is up for grabs by anyone.
I don't know. Anybody, anything goes. I mean, we have, it's the Pac-12. There's a lot of good teams. And every week somebody can compete. So I really couldn't tell you right now.
A couple guys said Washington, like Colorado linebacker Rick Gamboa.
I'm going with my odds at Washington. I know my friend JoJo McIntosh, he would probably be happy for me to say that. We played a high school together, and you know, very good friends in the past few years playing against them, and it was real fun. So I'm hoping they win.
Some guys said Washington or someone else. USC linebacker Porter Gustin thought Stanford or Washington.
Tough to say. There's a lot of good teams up there, but I mean, Stanford, Washington. I'd love you to have an opportunity at them, but it's very competitive, so it could be this.
Arizona linebacker Colin Schooler added Oregon to the list.
It's up for grabs between, I think, Stanford, Washington, and Oregon all have a great chance to win it.
USC was also a favorite. Running back Patrick Laird from Cal wanted to say USC, but Cal fans would be mad, so he changed his answer to Utah.
But no, I want to play the champion, because if we beat the South champion, and, you know, I met Cam Smith at the same camp, and he's here, so actually, no, I can't say USC, because the Cal fans would be mad. I'm going to play it safe. I'm going to say Utah.
Michigan State's offensive lineman Brake Brandle said SC.
I'm going to go with USC. Yeah.
Yes. WSU safety Jalen Thompson also thinks SC.
Not really sure. Maybe USC.
Thanks for listening to the Podcast of Champions. I'm Chloe Christikopoulos.